Hey everyone, welcome back to the Vet Blast podcast. What's new in feline diabetes? We have a lot to unpack with this conversation as we chat about beyond insulin. What is new in our furry feline friends? We want to thank our friends at Royal Canin for supporting and joining us is the one and only Dr. Lacey Lee. How are you, my friend?
I am great. Hi, everyone. I'm so excited to be here, and the topic is just one of my favorite.
It's catastic, you know it. Well, a little bit of background about our wonderful colleague, Dr. Lee. She is a graduate of the LSU School of Veterinary Medicine with over 23 years of private practice experience focused on feline medicine. She's the owner and founder of Cat Care Center at Baton Rouge, a feline-only veterinary hospital offering advanced diagnostics, imaging, and radioactive iodine-131 therapy. Dr. Lacey serves on the board of directors of the Feline Veterinary Medical Association, is the chair of the Student Engagement Committee, and an appointed member of the Feline VMA Guidelines Committee. She has completed extensive postgraduate training in feline medicine and serves as a clinical study investigator and frequent national speaker. Dr. Lacey is currently pursuing her American Board Veterinary Practitioners Diplomat Feline. Congratulations with that, by the way. It's wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, it is definitely something I'm very excited to work towards.
Yeah,
Absolutely.
absolutely. Fantastic. Okay, so let's get into it. So which cats are most at risk of developing diabetes mellitus and why?
Yeah, so we want to think about our cats that are over 8, but specifically really looking at a peak between the ages of 10 and 13 years of age. And mainly, we're going to see it in females as well, but think that male, obese, indoor cat lives a sedentary lifestyle, minimal exercise. You know, for breeds here, most of our cats that are going to get it are domestic short hair, domestic long hairs. Although geographically, there's some breeds that we think about, but in for us, it's every cat we're going to see in practice every day. Those are the cats we got to think about. The prevalence is increasing. It goes anywhere from 1 to 100 to 1 in 400. And it's in, like I said, it's increasing. And, you know, the interesting thing is why? I think that's the question of the day, right? We're always asking that when it comes to our feline patients. Why? Well, some of it is genetics, but a lot of it likely has to do with lifestyle and diet. And we know that obese cats are 4 times more likely to develop diabetes mellitus than our ideal weight cats. The other factor we have to think about is the potential of comorbidities in our cats. We all know as these cats are aging, they like to grocery shop for multiple different things that we have to deal with on a regular basis, right? So we do have to think about these comorbidities like pancreatitis and chronic enteropathy as a role, but ultimately it's just a lifetime of factors that affect those beta cells. And the beta cells in those that pancreas or DIVAs, they do not like to be they do not like excess glucose. They like that nice, perfect environment. And for a long time, our cats can compensate. Their insulin's working, their beta cells are producing compensatory insulin secretion so that they can remain euglycemic. And over time, as more and more just get tired, we begin to see the sequela of diabetes mellitus, the sequela develop.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate. And I know you're just talking about obesity. And given that obesity is such a significant risk factor, how do you approach that obesity prevention? And are there any strategies that you can recommend for those that are at risk?
Yeah, I sure can. For me, I guess I want to start by saying this is two distinct patient populations that I really, really am looking at prevention in. Number one, my kittens. That is an opportunity to prevent, right? And prevention, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. So when they're coming in and we have the way we set up our kitten visits, and yes, our vaccinations are important and all of the exams are important, but During that time, during that series of visits, I'm taking that time to get to know this cat and to get to know this caregiver. What is the lifestyle of this cat going to look like? Is it going to have an indoor, outdoor lifestyle? Is it going to be predominantly indoor? What are the caregivers? What can they do? What are their burdens? I need to think about that caregiver. And at that point, I want to get them very engaged. I want to teach them about muscle condition. I want to use a muscle condition score chart and teach them. I want them to learn about body condition. And one of the tools that I love are Royal Canin makes these really cool growth charts where we can track these kittens' growth and we can show their caregivers where they are on the sh on this chart and what might be ideal for that cat, right? And I think that is really fun because I remember when my kids were small and I would go to the pediatrician and I would see where they charted on the where they were charting on that growth chart. That was just so fun for me. So it's an opportunity to really get these caregivers engaged and really understand the importance of nutrition in our feline patients. And then for me, the second group of cats that I think is really very important is going to be those cats that are entering that mature or adult life stage, right? Where they are, their body condition score is beyond ideal, they're overweight or obese. That's the cat, that's the caregiver I want to really start making them understand the importance of weight loss. I want to address, is this cat getting exercise? Do they have any hunting behaviors they do? Meaning maybe it's food puzzles or something like that. If they're an indoor only cat, applying those cat friendly principles to their lifestyle to help encourage a happy cat, because the last thing we want to do is let them turn to eating as a way to pass the day. You know, another important thing is, and everybody, I hear this every day in my caregiver population is, well, they're meowing at me, right? They're meowing, so they must be hungry. And I think that that's a big misconception. And what we're doing is we hear that meow, and maybe it's just that they want our attention, and maybe it's just that they want us to sit down on the floor and maybe play with a wand or something with them. It doesn't always mean they want to be fed. But once we start that, they're very smart, right? It becomes that vicious cycle. So this is very important at this life stage. I want to address the weight loss and the making sure they're getting their correct caloric intake. Calculate that number out for these caregivers and help them understand how that might look. So I think for me, those are my two biggest populations, kittens, and then as they're growing and we're seeing what they're becoming.
You bring up a great point where you're talking about listening to the caregiver. And now in 2026, more than ever, we're really talking about customizable care, individualized care. You know, it's not a one size fits all anymore like it used to be. And so the fact that you're really leaning in on the cat parent and listening to what their wants and needs are, I think goes such a long way. It's fantastic.
It does. And you know, really helping them, listening to their burdens, because I may not be able to do everything at one visit, but there's this spectrum of care and it's a continuum of care that we can really engage with these caregivers and make them feel that they trust us. Because remember, we're in a day where there's a lot of online voices, and I want them to trust me. I want to be the voice that they listen to.
Yeah, absolutely. Well said. And speaking of like spectrum of care and dealing with difficult situations, when we give that diagnosis of diabetes, that can be obviously very difficult to hear. And the fact that, oh my gosh, I have to give insulin. And so, what are some factors that influence your choice to use an SGLT2, excuse me, SGLT2 inhibitor versus insulin for diabetic treatment?
That's a great question. And thank you for asking that because it's very important for everybody to remember it really comes down to the cat in front of me. It really does. It comes down to that patient. What's going on in that cat? Do I suspect that this is just simple diabetes mellitus, maybe secondary to obesity, overweight, or do I suspect that this patient has comorbidities? How old is this cat, right? If this cat falls within that range that we're thinking of, greater than 8 and 10 to 13, and I don't see many comorbidities, and after discussing with the caregiver and what fits their lifestyle best, that may go into my choice, right? An SGLT2 inhibitor might be great for the cat that is healthy, they're eating, all they're doing is showing classic signs of diabetes mellitus, and my diagnostic labs also agree with that diagnosis. That might be a caregiver and a patient that an SGLT2 inhibitor is absolutely perfect for. However, if as the trusted resource for that caregiver and that cat, I suspect there's a comorbidity, or even though I have no way to know how many functioning beta cells are left in that baby, I can think, is this cat showing me indications that there might be something else going on? Then I might be a little bit hesitant to start with an SGLT2 inhibitor. So ultimately, again, it's going to come down to the factors that are associated with the caregiver, what's going on in this patient, and what's going to best suit the team. Because we all know diabetes mellitus management in the cat takes a village. It takes a village. It takes a whole team.
Yeah, it really does. And then in addition to talking about the insulin, we're also going to be talking about diet. And what are some of those key features that you look for in diets for diabetic cats? And is it the same for every patient?
Yeah, so first, we want a palatable diet. Am I right? We want a
Yes.
cat. We want a diet a cat's gonna eat. That's the bottom line. I want a diet that my cat looks forward to eating. These are carnivores. They like to have choice in the matter. Let's not forget that our feline patients want choice. So palatability is number one. Secondly, I want a diet that's going to maintain weight loss but maintain skeletal muscle. That is so important for the cat because there are many disease processes that happen to this age group, not just diabetes. And a couple of them, in, such as kidney disease, weight loss and muscle loss is a negative prognostic indicator, right? So we have to think about that. So I want a diet that has really digestible protein and it's a little bit higher in protein. Most of my cats with diabetes are going on a higher protein, digestible protein diet. I want a diet that is has adapted fats. It's moderate in fat, but it's fats that this cat can utilize. Secondly, is I want it to have a lower carb content. But I want to make the statement, be very careful with when you're looking at a diet, be very careful of reading that carb content. And the reason I say that is because not all carbs are created equal. We want a diet that is lower in starches. We love a good fiber because that helps with motility and it helps with, you know, satiety. It helps these cats feel full. So we want to make sure that we're paying attention to that. And lastly, I think this is very important because I've seen over the years in practice, I have seen cats that were caloric restricted on a diet that may not have been very nutrient calculated for that get into trouble with aggressive weight loss. So we want that diet to have a great nutrient to caloric ratio that is safe. And I'm going to emphasize safe for caloric restriction in these cats. And I know it seems like it sounds too good to be true, right? And I will tell you that for me, the diet I currently am using in my patients, in my diabetic cats, is Royal Canin's new Glyco Advanced diet. I cannot say personally and clinically and from a caregiver standpoint enough good things about this diet. My cats love it, for number one, they love it. My caregivers do not mind feeding a diet that has a little bit that is a medical diet as long as their cat loves it. People want to see their cats eating. There is something about that. My cat's eating, so it feels good, right? I think it's just ingrained in our brain.
Yeah.
But that diet ticks all the boxes for me. And at the end of the day, it's really all about the cats. A diet can look good on paper, but when the diet helps me manage my diabetic patients, that's going to make a difference in my recommendations, what I'm going to choose, and it's going to make a difference in this cat's longevity, potentially healthy lifestyle. Quality of life is everything with these guys. So, where things might change a little bit, though, Dr. Chrisman, I want to make this point
Yeah.
is, let's say I have a cat that is diabetic that has significant comorbidities, right? Okay, because we know we're going to run into that. So let's
Yeah.
say that this cat does have a level of chronic iris stage chronic kidney disease that warrants a kidney diet. That may be a patient where this protein may not be best for that cat. So that might be the scenario where I'm going to reach for a different diet. But in general, for all of my diabetic patients, this is the diet I'm using now.
And when you're having that conversation in the exam room with the caregivers, is it an easier conversation with the newly diagnosed diabetic when you're talking about your nutritional strategy for managing diabetic cats in practice? Like, what does that look like when you're chatting or walking them through that diet discussion?
Yeah, so the first part is we go back to that conversation with what causes diabetes mellitus in the cat. I think that's very important to start from the beginning. Why does your cat, what are the things we know? What are the things we can control? I can't control your cat's genetics, right? I can't. I can't control your lifestyle and your ability. Well, I can a little bit, but not much. If you have a job from 8 to 6 every day and you come home and you have children, me saying, I need you to do this specific exercise with your cat, this specific stuff. So it starts with what are the things I can control? And diet and weight loss and caloric content and maybe helping you achieve a good body condition score in this cat. That is something that we can work together. And notice I said together, because if you're going to recommend any sort of nutritional management, whether it be for diabetes or any disease, right? Our job as the veterinarians, and this is where our nurses come in handy, this is where our team gets involved. Our job is to help these caregivers see it through. Not just to recommend it, but just to follow up with them. How is the cat doing? Does this cat like this diet? And, the transitioning is a very important part of this as well. And many of these cats are multi-cat households.
Which makes it another layer of a challenge for sure. And I know ultimately, doctor, our goal with our diabetic cats is for remission. You know, it'd be great for all of our diabetic cats to go into remission, but some cats in remission will certainly relapse. So what strategies do you use to help keep those cats in remission?
Again, let's make sure we're talking about the diabetic cat that has diabetes mellitus but doesn't have it because of a major comorbidity. So we're not talking about those acromegaly cats or those Cushingoid cats or cats that have significant comorbidities. We're literally talking about, our classic diabetic cat that we see almost weekly, maybe a little bit less, but we see it pretty routinely in private practice. The first thing I do is, again, have a conversation with that caregiver. I want you to understand, yes, what are our goals for this cat? Because maybe the goals for this caregiver is not remission. Obviously, that's what we want and that's what we're trying to aim for, but we also have to take into account what their lifestyle is. So for me, if diabetic remission is the goal, then I really feel that I need to put you on a restricted caloric intake, and I need to help you feed for that. That is paramount. Diet is, nutrition is paramount for these guys because There's lots of things we can't control. And with a diet that is designed to help with postprandial blood glucose, a steady state of glucose in the bloodstream is going to allow any of those beta cells in that pancreas that are hanging on and ready to come back, it's going to allow them to wake back up and to start functioning again. And that's ultimately what we want. And when those beta cells are not experiencing, excess glucose in the bloodstream, because beta cells are divas, they are divas. They do not like long-term hyperglycemia. That is not okay for them. So when the blood glucose is steady, the beta cells are allowed to recover. And no further damage, or hopefully no further damage, at least in the part that we can control, these guys are going to really become more sensitive to their own insulin receptors and secreting more insulin. And hopefully we're going to take these cats back to the days before they developed diabetes mellitus, where they actually could compensate and they could manage their own. So I think for me, the most important factor with remission is helping my caregiver achieve a good body condition score, caloric restriction safely, and supporting them through the process. That's huge. And a lot of my team members are excellent here. I've trained them how to do this so that they can help me, because part of being the veterinarian is, as well as I do, it's a lot for us to do in a day to have to do everything, right?
Sometimes it can really throw your schedule off in a tailspin. When you have the diabetic cat coming in, whether they're regulated, unregulated, they have lots of questions, of course. So, and I love what you're saying, because it is a teamwork approach, both with the caregiver and then with the team, the technician, the CSR. They all play such a vital role in taking care of these cute little fur babies. And ideally, it'd be great for all of them to go into remission, but we do see those that are uncontrolled. So, what are your top tips for managing cats with uncontrolled diabetes, like from medical management to getting cats to eat the recommended diet that you would provide?
So this is a good one. So we'll spend some time here. Number one, always do a good physical exam on this patient. Make sure, if you suspect that from the clinical history, or you suspect that something has changed in that cat, maybe they're developing a comorbidity. Because for me, if I have a cat that's coasting and doing really well, and I feel like I'm managing their diabetes mellitus as I should, and they're doing well and they're happy and their clinical signs, because that's the ultimate goal, right? Is we're trying to achieve the clinical signs that is going to be okay for this caregiver and supportive for this cat. If that's changed, I want these guys back in the clinic. And I am telling the caregivers this from the beginning so that they have a set parameter. And I'm going to be looking for a comorbidity. So I think addressing comorbidities is very, very, very important. Consistently coming up with a care plan for checking their blood work, checking their urine that is affordable for your caregiver, addressing the financial burden questions, and what can we do routinely, getting these cats in regularly. It really strikes me as something that is ironic, in the sense that there's a lot of times, people will say, "Oh, my cat's healthy, it doesn't need to go to the veterinarian." This is the one species that needs to go to the veterinarian like three times a year, right? Because they hide everything. So for me, I want a consistent plan. So it's about consistency. Let me share with you why your cat needs to come see me at least twice a year, and here's what we're going to do about it. Finally, you need to institute the recheck plan according to the treatment for that cat that you chose, right? So if you're putting that cat on insulin, set up a plan with that caregiver. Are we going to do continuous glucose monitors? Are we going to check their fructosamine? What are we going to do that's feasible for you? And then if we're doing SGLT2 inhibitors, we're going to monitor this cat over time to make sure that we're not we don't have any depleted, more depleted beta cells, and that this cat actually can produce its own insulin, because that would not be good if it couldn't. So we want to make sure that over time the treatment we chose is correct. And then we want to continually reassess nutrition for this cat and continue. Every cat, every visit needs to have the nutrition, the body condition, the muscle condition reassessed. And lastly, I think this is the most impactful thing that I learned in my career with cats over the last 23 years is just because they won't eat the diet the first time you try it, and just because they walk away from it, does not mean they're not going to. Okay. So what I'll do with my patients is I don't mix when I'm transitioning a cat to a diet that I really want them to eat. I never started in the hospital when they're sick. I never started until I get them a little stabilized because I want them to eat it. I don't want a food aversion. So at my hospital, there's no medical diet that gets started in the hospital unless they're on a feeding tube, and that might be a little different. Then once they get home, I have a typed up explicit detail instruction for my caregiver, meaning maybe day one, day two, we don't do anything. Maybe day three, you get a fresh bowl, something new, not that anything the cat's used to, a few kibbles of that diet, not directly next to the food that they're used to eating, but somewhere in the vicinity, because that's where they know they're okay. That's where their food station is. Set it up and see what that cat does. If that cat is willing, and this is important, if that cat is willing to smell that cat is going to probably eat that diet at some point. It may take 2 weeks, it may take 3 weeks, but if they smell the diet, now if they walk 360 degrees around that diet to avoid it, it may take you a little bit longer. But if they're willing to sniff it, don't give up. Each day, add a little bit more to that new bowl until that cat starts to try it, and then decrease slowly the old one, because you want to give the cat the illusion that the choice is always theirs.
I love that.
And that is literally a tip that has allowed me to transition my patients to almost, in almost all of them, to some degree, a diet that I really hope that they can. That they will eat, so that I can use that as part of my nutritional management.
And we have, I think we live in such an instant gratification society where like we only give them like 5 or 10 minutes. Like the cat parents would be like, oh, they don't like the food. Like, wait a minute. Give it some time. And I love that you have these instructions that you give to the caregivers about that too, setting that expectation ahead of time so they know, like, okay, Dr. Lee told me like it's gonna take several days for them so they don't get frustrated right away. So I love that you share that.
Yeah, and it's funny because I will have this is like the most interesting part is they'll call me back or they'll text our hospital because we allow text, right? So they'll call and they'll say, "Dr. Lacey, this cat, there's no way we're eating it. We just sniff it and walk away." And I'm like, "Brilliant. Excellent. I am so excited, Dr. Crispin." That's the moment when I get to say, "Great. This may take us 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks. But it's going to happen." And I want to share with you where I think this was very impactful for me. And I want to share where specifically Glyco Advanced has made a huge difference for me in a couple of my patients, one in particular. And this diet, while, the studies on this diet were intended for caloric restriction for cats that were diagnosed diabetes. They didn't have complicated diabetes, right? But this patient of mine, and this is my experience, and I want to make sure we know that this patient came in and she was diagnosed at that 12-year-old age, and she was a female, but she was diagnosed as a DKA. She presented as a DKA. That's what she presented in. So once we treated her, we got her through her DKA, we got her home, we got her on her insulin. At that point, I started talking about Glyco Advanced. We transitioned her. She wanted the diet almost immediately. So
Wow.
she rarely needed a transition, but she got one. We transitioned her over about 5 to 7 days. When I tell you, she went into complete remission from a DKA standpoint within 4 weeks.
Oh my
Four
gosh.
weeks. I had, and not only did her clinical signs go away, but her fructosamine was normal. She didn't have any ketones in her bloodstream, no BHBs, no urine ketones. Her blood glucose was stable. She had no glucosuria. She didn't have any clinical signs. She was completely in remission. And to this day, and we fed her for caloric restriction because she was about a body condition score of 7. And I fed her for ideal, which, 5.5 to 6. And she went into remission, and her caregivers could not be more happy, and they love the diet. And so now, what we're doing with her is we are monitoring her closely, right? Because we want to make sure that we're doing everything we can on our end to maintain a remission. But also, we are feeding her now for maintenance because she's lost the weight she needed. So isn't that awesome?
That's
That right
fantastic.
there warms my heart because every day, you and I, we're practicing every single day. And at the end of the day, I want to go home and I want to lay down and I want to know I did a good job today and I helped somebody and I made their life easier. And that just warms my heart. It makes me tear up every time I think about her because that is awesome. And to this day, and now we have a couple of other cats in the same situation. So I'm so happy to share that.
That's amazing. And that's the beauty and advancement of science and veterinary medicine when they have these wonderful diets like this that they can do to, and these great stories and testimonials. Oh, warms my heart too, Dr. Lacey Lee. Thank you for all the great work that you're doing, and thank you for sharing your expertise with us.
Yes, I absolutely appreciate being here with you, Dr. Chrisman. It's fun. It's been a lot of fun. But again, after 23 years of doing veterinary medicine and this career, I feel like I fall in love with it every year. I
Good to
still
hear.
love it, and part of that is because of the people and the industry and the caregivers, everybody willing. It almost seems like when you agree, it almost seems like now, maybe it's just me, but 2026, everybody's kind of working as that team to really support those feline patients.
And there's a lot more innovation now in 2026, which makes practicing fun. You know,
Yes.
like, right, with the clients, when you're getting happy clients, it's like happy veterinary teams. And exactly to your point, when they're on that great diet from Royal Canin, you're like, oh my God, it makes me feel like I did a great job. So I think this year we have so many great new, innovations out there, which is such an exciting time to be in this field. Oh, it's a great time.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's a wonderful time. And, feline, cat friendly, and feline medicine, it's becoming the industry driver. And that's awesome. That means we're going to have more studies, hopefully, and we're going to have more things out there. And with, like you said, innovation, the sky's the limit, right? The future's
Yes,
feline.
absolutely. Keep on thinking outside the litter box, right, Dr. Lee?
Yes, absolutely. And also pay attention to the litter box, right? Because
Right.
pay attention to how many urine clumps you got in that litter box, because if all of a sudden you got 5, two is probably normal. Pay attention. That cat needs to see the doctor.
That's data right there. There you go. You heard it here, folks, from Dr. Lacey Lee. Thank you so much for joining us. And thank you to our friends at Royal Canin for supporting this great conversation. Don't forget to rate the podcast as we continue to grow. And we'll see you next time right here in the Vet Blast podcast. Take care, everyone.
Bye.